Have you ever had a feeling that something dreadful was about to happen?
This whole premise is sweaty.
Okay, moving right along.
You gonna plagiarize the whole thing for us? Do you have any thoughts of your own on this matter?
Just remember that this thing isn't as black as it appears.
Hold on to your butt.
The only difference between me and a homeless man is his job.
I'm glad you're here to tell us.
I'm looking for the least possible amount of responsibility.
And that ain't bad.
I'm in a glass case of emotion.
Man's got to know his limitations.
I'm glad you came back.
In the bag.
Network.
I drink it up.
Welcome to the Bag Pod, everyone. We've got the usual crew, Joe Doug, Jimmy TV, and Alan P.
Aroused by bees.
We need to come up with a good handle for Alan P.
We do. We also need to come up with a good handle for Jay Krangle and W. Templin.
Is Krangs no good? I like Krangs.
I kind of like Krangs, too, but I don't think he likes it.
You mean like Krang from TMNT?
Yeah. Crotch Brain.
Yeah.
I like it.
Who wouldn't like that?
Krangs.
The brain atop of a...
Krangs.
How about a handle of whiskey for me?
Right.
Oh, God.
Okay. In any case, we'll be discussing the latest Game of Thrones and Mad Men episodes as usual. We'll hop into the Game of Thrones immediately with perhaps one of the greatest quotes Game of Thrones has provided so far, as Theon's sister Yara calls him the dumbest cunt alive. And I'm very pleased by not only how they've written Yara, but how good the actress is too. Like they really hit it out of the park on that one.
Yo, is it just me or were you guys hating on Yara when we first saw her the first couple episodes? I was telling you guys, no, she's good. And then Jimmy TV and Bagman were like, no, she sucks.
I felt the same thing. What's wrong with her?
Why don't I like her?
Yes.
Yeah. Or what is it about her? Is it the actress or the...
Frankenstein.
I always just imagined her to be a little bit more of a vixen kind of thing, I guess.
Why? Because Theon liked her? Theon likes anything with a hole.
Even after that toothy wench that he had on
his
the
salt
boat.
Wife. His salt wife.
I always.
You'll be king soon enough.
I always envisioned her to be a little bit smarter, proud of her womanhood a little bit more, like, you know, more feminine a little bit and kind of owning it. While still being a badass. And we still haven't really seen her being a badass. We just see her with her feet on the table calling Theon the dumbest cunt in the world.
Well, I mean, I think we see her being a badass by the respect that she gets from her crewmates.
I mean, this is a woman in Westeros, let's not forget.
Yeah,
there are no feminine women
on the battlefield.
I thought that it was good casting because... Maybe this is just showing my low standards, but like that actress seems really tough, but I felt like there was something seductive about the way she was looking at him. I just came when they first met.
Wait, when she was seducing her brother?
Yeah, that she kind of was. She was leading him to that point that she kept flirting back with him, and she could have told him obviously that, you know, they were related, but
hey, dumb fuck.
Yeah.
She's a confident young lady.
I would have to say I'm a little disappointed in the Dagmar Clefjaw replacement, or whatever, Theon's right-hand man, who is clearly just an idiot. And for some odd reason, Theon continues to listen to him.
Yeah, he really does.
He's got kind of a vacant look about him.
He looks kind of like Three Finger out of Wrong Turn, or whatever those movies are called.
Oh, no.
You know what I'm talking about?
You don't want to look like Three Finger from Wrong Turn, believe that.
Basically, he looks like a guy out of Deliverance. But in the books, he's like the dude who got his head chopped off at Winterfell. He's like kind of an older, seasoned, cagey vet.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of, you know, it's good people, but yeah, whatever. It's all good.
He seemed like he might be that when we first met him, but he's really turned into a slack-jawed doofus.
Yeah, it's really weird because it seems like he either knows what he's doing and he's just doing it to get his to get his jollies, you know?
Yeah, like he might be getting a huge chuckle.
Yeah,
out.
Yeah.
Every time he tells CI to do something, he always has this shit-eating grin on his face. Yeah, like, I can't believe he's going to do this.
Yeah, he really does. He really does.
So, I don't know.
It's like, it's going to be hilarious if I tell Theon to do this and he actually does it. Oh, shit, he did it.
Yeah. So, I don't know. But Theon clearly, again, doesn't know what the fuck he's doing.
You know who does know what he's doing? The Lord of the Bones.
Oh, the Lord of the Bones always knows what he's doing.
Got him. I always thought the Lord of the Bones was, like, really scrawny. It was, like, 100 pounds.
You're thinking, I mean,
not coming in at 253 hundo.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean,
it's pretty beast.
That just means he gets more bones on him. That's not bad.
His helmet was hilarious.
His helmet was so bad. It was so bad.
I love the helmet, man. Get out of here. That helmet was hilarious.
It looked like the mask that the bad guy wore in Mortal Kombat 2.
Stop hating on the Lord of Bones, son.
Somebody saw Mortal Kombat Annihilation?
Was that Mortal Kombat 2 movie?
Have you never seen Mortal Kombat 2?
I have not. I probably will not ever see it.
I don't. Yeah, I mean, there's no reason for you to, but.
Well. So.
Other than look at this guy's mask, I mean.
Okay. I will also check this mask.
But yeah, no. So we get the Lord of Bones. We're starting to get introduced to more and more freed men above the wall, north of the wall, if you will. And we get reintroduced, or I guess Corrin Halfhand comes back into the picture. We've been wondering how it was all going to happen, and it looks like it's a little fanfare, I suppose. You know, they took Corrin, and you know, he's because they were looking for Jon Snow after his awful chase through the wilds for Ygritte in that one episode. But I don't know what it's. I mean, I guess it makes sense, but I still feel like it's kind of disappointing how it all ended up to get back to Corrin in the first place.
Well, honestly, it's pretty similar to how it is in the book, where, in the book, Corrin knows that John's probably not going to kill her, and that's why he intentionally makes everyone leave, kind of. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, he's not positive John's going to do it or not, but that's the reason why he kind of leaves him to his own devices, because he doesn't think John's going to have the stones to do it in front of everybody.
Yeah.
I'm pretty okay with the way it all ended up working out. It took me a second to realize it was him without his little hoodie.
Smaller skull cap, yeah.
Skull
cap.
Yeah, he looked even more like a badass, so I was pleasantly surprised by that.
Yeah. But yeah, so what, they're marching off to see Mance Rayder right now, correct? That's where they're going.
I might have asked this last pod, but have they cast Mance yet?
I do not believe so.
No, I don't think so either.
I think it's to those who've read the books, I think it's pretty obvious where they're gonna leave off with everyone's storyline after this season. You know what I'm saying?
I'll talk about that a little later when I get to one part, which. Yeah, so. But was there anything else north of the wall? Oh, yeah, they found the dragon glass.
Yeah, we finally got a little bit more Samwise than my man Dolores said.
That was an interesting find.
And the horn. It sure was horny.
Yeah, was that the Jorman horn? What horn was that?
I don't know. We're going to find out, I'm sure. Wait, Jake, which one is Dolores Ed? Is he the guy with the short hair? The short red hair?
Did Dolores find the Jorman horn reborn?
Dolores Ed is the elderly one of the three.
He's the older, dark
yeah.
Guy. Oh, yeah, yeah, Gren. Gren
is the attractive one, yeah.
Right, yeah. Okay, that's what I thought.
But yeah, no, so they find the cache of dragon glass. I believe in the books they said that Jon had hidden that, correct? He had found
I think at one point Ghost is running away and kind of leads Jon to it or something that.
Yeah. But this is fine. This is fine.
Fine.
Finders keepers.
I mean, people were definitely pissed off that hadn't been taken care of yet on the boards.
Oh really?
I think people are going to be very relieved that someone found the dragon glass.
Jimmy TV, do you frequent the boards?
Yeah, I do like to frequent the boards. Both not so much for the show, but I like to really look at the ones for the most recent book and for the book that's coming out later. I mean,
I'm just curious. Next 10 years. I actively avoid message boards now because I get too angry. Do you find that when you go through the Game of Thrones one that there are people like making ridiculous or outlandish comments that anger you?
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, always. And I guess kind of what's worse about like about the Westeros boards that I go to is it's not all just ignorant. You know what I mean? Like some of it you do kind of have to – some of it does make you think, but then at the same time, like you said, obviously people are incredibly well, you want to kill them sometimes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jon Snow looks like a Jew.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, stuff like that.
Alan's anti-Semitism finally coming out.
What message board is that on?
I'm sure somewhere up there.
That's the neo-Nazis of Westeros.
Yeah. Board. The Aryan Brotherhood.
Yeah.
Lannisters?
Very true.
The Lannister message board. John looks like a Jew.
In any case, let's go to the Stark camp here, where Rob puts Catelyn in her place. I mean, that was – Catelyn really fucked up, and Rob made sure that she knew that he was the king. He was the king.
Hell of the king.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it definitely didn't
– King of the North.
King of the North.
North.
It didn't seem like he was just putting on a show either for Carr Stark, you know? Like, I thought he did a good job of making it not seem like he was just putting on a show.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, it was definitely legitimate, so.
Yeah.
But then we had – an incredibly lengthy scene between Rob and the Lady Talisa. And while I'm watching this scene, I'm just thinking of all the other things that they
like what?
Put in the show.
Like what?
Well, I mean, it just seems like everything that they do seems to be a little rushed. So if they could just have taken their time with a couple of things, like something that happens later in the episode with Tyrion and Roz, like, that threat that he gives Cersei almost has no punch to it, because we don't really know.
Before we skip ahead to that, what's the point of having that scene, of having her tell the story? What do you think this point was? Was it just to set up the relationship between her and Rob, or was it applicable to more of the, you know, the whole story, or what?
Well, I mean, it seems to be along her sort of spiel there where, like, she wants to make sure Rob isn't just, like, some dickish king, you know, that she actually wants to care about, you know, how she said, you know, you have to figure out how you're supposed to rule afterwards. You can't just try to win the throne first. You know, so it seems to be along that whole line of thing. And, I mean, I don't have – it just seems like –
It's not a scene that's in the books.
No, because
Jimmy TV, do you think that it was a worthy addition, or was it just something that they just felt like they had to throw in to flesh out their characters?
No, I think it was a worthy addition. For something I've been trying to do the past few episodes, especially is especially whenever I see like behind the scenes videos and stuff like that, a lot of the more poignant actors always, especially once we've read the books, all, you know, like to keep saying that, you know, this is an adaptation of the books. It's not the books. It's its own thing. It's its own entity. And I think that scene added a lot and was in line with what the show has been doing, which is give every character more depth, even if they're seemingly pointless at the time. What would piss me off a little bit is if she really is who she says she is. If she is, then and knowing what's going to end up having to happen, then it would be a waste of time. But while I don't think there is a lot of other stuff that they needed to add. So that's more why I don't mind the scene, is that while Bagman is saying that they could have added stuff, and obviously they could have, like I was kind of saying earlier, it seems like they're very. I know exactly where each character is going to end up at the end of the season, and for them to have included any of those characters furthering their story along would have pushed them a little too far for where the show wants to go with the last two episodes kind of being the big reveals kind of stuff. So,
all right, now, most importantly, Alan, how did you feel about them using a body double for the main lady? It was obviously a body. It was obviously they never showed her face and her naked body. They kept hiding her face.
Now, I was very focused on this, and I felt like at first, yes, but I thought there was a shot where they fell to the floor together that it was that you could see that it was her. Or am I mistaken?
I'm not sure.
I definitely was aware of the fact that because I've been wanting to see her naked all since we met her.
Yeah.
And I was like, is this? This is just some person. So I don't know if it wasn't her. That's fine. I still got to look at it.
I mean, she had a nice booty.
Yeah.
I didn't have a problem with the scene. I had more of a problem with just like the collection of Rob scenes that revolved around him and his courtship of the Lady Talisa.
Well, here's the thing, and if we're talking about the show being its own thing, see, you and I must have looked at that scene very differently because you have the knowledge of the entirety of the source material, so it's kind of a what things are they going to bring to light, what things are they going to highlight or add, et cetera. And to me, this is all new. Mm-hmm. And I, watching it as its own thing, kind of felt like the scenes between them are important because the show is all about ruling and the battle for the throne. And now we're seeing the other side of discussions of what happens when you win. Like, I feel like their two scenes are kind of getting into the heart of what is the point of this game of thrones.
Ooh. Ooh.
There you go.
Well, basically what I'm trying to say is that I feel as though what they've done with the season, because they've added all this Rob material, because there aren't any Rob chapters. So the only time we actually see Rob is when he's with Caitlin, basically, throughout the books.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
it seems, yeah.
And so basically, my main problem is that it's okay to add it, but it seems like dramatic effect is lost in a bunch of the other stuff, because it seems like it's mostly just trying, like, kind of almost rushing through it and just showing, we don't really get a lot of build to some of the more dramatic events, you know, like the first time Jaqen kills someone, or you know, that sort of stuff, or when Arya gets captured, or something like that. Like,
when you just said there are no,
like, everything just happens and happens and happens, and I'm saying without the Rob scenes, like, I don't really need to see Rob fall in love. To me, that doesn't, I mean, it kind of builds his character a little bit, but for me, that doesn't really do much. So I was just saying, like, if they had taken out all those Rob scenes, I feel like they could have added a couple more scenes where they let the drama build in some of the actual parts of the book.
When you said there are no Rob scenes, were you referring to the book?
Yeah, in the book, the book is separated by point of view chapters, as
know.
And he doesn't have any point of view chapters. So the only time we ever see him in the book is when his mom is there, basically.
Right.
Mommy.
And, I mean, is this their attempt to establish more of a through line with him so that we are watching that we are carried on with him into the next book? Or?
Well, I mean, in any of the books, he doesn't have any POV chapters. I mean,
so all of them.
Yeah, I mean, it's clear, as Jimmy TV said earlier, that they want to make sure every character kind of gets their due and has some depth. And, I mean, one of the things about the books is Rob really is just kind of almost a specter that's kind of – I mean, you hear about all of his battles, but you never see any. You know, you hear about how everyone loves him and that sort of stuff. But the only time you ever see him is when he's with Caitlin. And so, I mean, it's not like he's the most fleshed-out character in the books. It makes sense for the TV show, but I'm just saying, like, some of the other things just sort of happen as opposed to building up to some sort of dramatic effect where I'm like, oh, damn, you know, Danny's dragons got kidnapped. Like, I really care about this, you know. That's just my beef with the whole Rob love scene sort of stuff. I'm not saying the scenes aren't good. It's just,
this is kind of interesting. George R. R. Martin has said that if he were to go back and rewrite the first book or two books, that he would include Rob point of view chapters. Mm-hmm. They did feel like he sold people short without a voice, kind of when he's making his run and when he battles and stuff like that. He would have liked to have included that, I guess, a little bit more. So I think he probably likes all this new edition stuff.
Yeah, I don't know.
He loves the nudity.
He does love the nudity.
Moving on along. Rob blows up at Caitlin is because she, of course, lets Brienne and Jaime go, and so we get the first of what is probably going to be many Jaime and Brienne back and forths. And
the odd couple.
Exactly. So far, I like what I've been seeing. All that.
I want a sitcom, Brienne and Jaime. It's gonna be awesome.
But yeah, so far I've liked what I've seen, except that the canoe that they hopped in was absolutely ludicrous.
Did you expect it to be bigger?
I expected it to not look like it was going to sink when they said it.
Brienne's gonna sink like a stone if that thing keels over.
I was a little curious as to the fact that Brienne kept her armor on. That's probably not the best idea. And even if they are in the 2-foot creek, it's still, you know.
Well, not only that, but I mean the canoes and the Fellowship of the Ring with the hobbits in them were like palatial estates compared to that.
Yeah, but hobbits are so small.
This is so small.
Still, they had normal sized humans in them too. I'm just saying that thing definitely looked like it was gonna sink when Brienne pushed.
They definitely spared some expense on the prop budget with that canoe.
Yes. But I'm excited to see how this all translates from the book. I think. Brienne and Jaime are gonna. I think they're pretty good together, and Jamie's definitely bringing it, pulling out all the stops. So I'm excited to see how this ends up playing out on screen. What
aren't
else
we all?
I guess let's go to Arya. Let's go to Arya.
Yeah. Got some more meat pie. I love me some. I mean, some hot pie.
Hot pie seems to be expanding.
Yes.
Like
Leon's getting larger. Yeah.
Slowly expanding, forever and ever. Hot pie loves his pies. He loves talking about baking stuff.
He does. That's all he lives for, basically.
So Arya plays some mind games with Jaqen H'ghar.
Yes, she does. Well, first, she kind of... It seems as though the show wanted you to think that she let Tywin escape, as opposed to acting accordingly at the proper time. Huh? I don't remember if that actually happened in the book. I can't really remember what happened there, but it seemed like Tywin just kind of left, and it wasn't like... I mean, Arya afterwards was like, oh, I should have killed him. But before that, it didn't really seem like... she was ever considering it, so.
Well, yeah, because I don't think she ever really saw the immediate threat of Tywin, since they were always having how-to-dos.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because they showed that thing where she was like, oh, like it implied that she was thinking about stabbing him with that knife or whatever. We all agreed that it was kind of odd.
Yeah. I didn't.
I mean, other than Alan.
Yes, you did not.
Of course. Alan just loves little girls killing older men.
I stand by that he threatened her brother right in front of him, and I think it was a totally natural response for a child to be like, I'm going to kill this guy.
Okay. I'm going to kill you. I'm going to kill you, Tywin.
But before Tywin leaves, there's yet another mention of the Brotherhood.
Oh.
Yeah.
An exciting time.
Alan, what is this mysterious Brotherhood?
Yes.
What? How could I possibly know?
What do you think it is?
I think it's a Brotherhood of Thieves.
There's a prince of these thieves, and his name is Robin Hood.
Oh. Dave Chappelle is in it for some reason. It's kind of weird. It's exciting for them to kind of, I think they mentioned the Brotherhood earlier in the season, but it's nice to make sure that they called it back so that we kind of know what might be happening here in the next couple episodes.
Yeah, they mentioned them a couple episodes ago, or maybe it was last episode, that Papa Lannister thought that it was them who killed Old Balls outside of his door.
Mm. That's right.
Good old Balls.
Good old Balls.
Old Balls needed to go anyway. His balls were too damn old.
Mm-hmm. But in any case, as Joe Dog alluded to earlier, we get Arya playing some mind games with Jaqen H'ghar.
Jaqen H'ghar.
Yes, as Jaqen says that she has one more life, or he owes her one more life. She gets a nice little smirk on her face, and she names a name, and it happens.
She names
to be,
a name. She names a man's name.
Yes, she does.
Man's name.
And so then she pulls a fast one. It's like, all right, well, if you don't want to kill yourself, I think it's time that you help us escape.
If you don't want to kill yourself.
Mm-hmm. Unname me.
I kind of liked Jaqen's. I mean, it's not like anything. His acting wasn't anything great, but I thought it was all right there. He looked worried about that, for real. So.
Now the question is, do you think he's going to pop back up? And because in the books, him and Arya have a very cool last scene together, but I'm pretty sure that took place before they were supposed to leave the castle. Do you think we're still going to get that?
I think they have to. I mean.
As do I.
They could run into each other at some point.
Yeah, something has to happen because
especially for the closure of Jaqen H'ghar.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
He's the man.
He is the man. Anything else in Harrenhal?
Well, you don't want to hang out with Gregor Clegane when he's sober.
Drunk. No, when he's drunk, I thought it was.
No, I think he said he's worse company when he's sober, but he needed him to stay sober to take over shit.
Okay, yeah, he was worse company, but he was smarter, yeah.
Right,
they keep
a
lot of bodies hanging around that place, too. Somebody's going to get sick.
Yeah,
they do. They do keep a lot of bodies rotting around that place.
What did you think of Arya kind of not reacting to the bodies that she sort of wrought by her?
I thought she did kind of react to the bodies. Hit the bodies, hit the bodies, hit the bodies. Yeah.
Yeah, all right.
It wasn't that big
of a reaction, but I guess she did have a little.
She's starting to get hard.
She's getting hardened by everything she's been through the past few days or weeks or however long it's been.
Mm-hmm.
What is the time frame on this season? How long would you say it's been since Ned Stark got his head cut off?
I mean, it hasn't even been a year yet, has it?
No, yeah, I was going to say it covers maybe a couple months, 2 or 3 months.
I'd say six at most, yeah.
Yeah.
But something Jimmy TV is real excited about happened.
Oh.
In
what's that?
King's Landing.
Uh-huh.
And it was a little Podrick Payne.
Oh yeah, yeah. Oh wow. I never imagined Pod Payne to be that large.
No, Pod Payne is a big.
he was a big dude. I mean, I always imagined it would be some
he's
little scrawny 10-year-old or something like that.
Well, that's what he's supposed to be. Of course, they add like 3 years, but still, that's a... He looks like he could be a cousin of Hot Pie, almost.
Yeah, I was going to say 3 years and 200 pounds.
Which character were we talking about?
He just kind of got name-dropped. That was pretty much it. He was...
Oh, we didn't see him?
No, we did. He was,
he was holding a pitcher after...
He was pouring Tyrion's wine. Tyrion
oh,
Cersei's
okay.
Spine. This big, kind of bulky, young-looking dude. But yeah.
I remember this scene.
I have a feeling we won't see him next episode.
You don't think?
No, I don't think so.
Spoiler.
I think we'll see Bronn in that role probably.
No, I don't know.
But we'll find out.
Speaking of Bronn, Tyrion and Bronn are at odds here.
Yeah, that was nice. I like Bronn letting him know what he's all about.
Yeah, because he knows some shit about some shit.
Yeah, exactly.
But he does. I mean, he seems to be doing the right thing for the most part. Tyrion's main flaw would be that he's almost too compassionate at times, so Bronn is kind of helping him out in that area.
Exactly.
I'd
agree with that.
But yeah, no, we get another real choice scene between Cersei and Tyrion that I mentioned before.
Mm-hmm.
Again, Cersei and Tyrion are at odds, which is always fun to see. And when she reveals that she has his whore, Tyrion really acted the shit out of that one. Mr. Peter Dinklage with his somewhat surprised, somewhat horrified facial expression that seemed to be on camera for like 15 seconds.
And not to be overdone by Cersei's troll face, she was really popping it off towards him.
Always.
She's a ripe old cunt.
Yes, she is.
Butt-ass naked.
Alan, how tense were you during this scene?
I kind of started to suspect when they started to bring her in and they didn't show her face immediately that she might have the wrong girl. And I actually liked the lingering shot on his face because I like moments like that where he had to mask his reaction. He probably wanted to laugh or, like, breathe a sigh of relief. And I like that he kind of – you see him make the decision to keep his cool, and then he kind of – he gives her the, you know, double meaning message and kind of, like, feigns, like, outrage, like, that he's lost control of the Cersei afterwards with the, you know, you'll pay for this or whatever he said to her. So I thought something it was a really like well done scene.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty good, too. Like I said earlier when I was talking about Robb Stark, I didn't really get – because we didn't see much interaction between Tyrion and Roz, I didn't get that he actually kind of meant the threat that he gave to Cersei and actually cared about her. And in the books, of course, there's kind of a bit of a lengthy, friending, I guess. Becoming a friend with a different whore.
Leia. Yeah. Right? Isn't that what her name was?
Ooh,
like that.
Yeah. Well,
they're Facebook friends. They poke each other.
Mm-hmm. They poke.
Hey.
But yeah,
I didn't take. Oh, sorry, go on.
Well, I was just going to say, you know, in the book, like, he actually cares for the woman that Cersei ends up bringing in. And,
Well, he cares for Ross because they had a little thing going up in Winterfell before.
And like you said, he's too compassionate.
Yeah.
I get what you're saying, Mr. Bag, but what I read that as more of a, he needed to say that was an act to make it look like he was upset. Like, he couldn't turn around and just be like, okay. You know, he needed to react the way he would have if she had grabbed the right whore. Mm-hmm. And I felt like that was the character acting and not the actor in that scene.
Yeah, no, I mean, it makes sense. Just we kind of missed, I kind of missed the little dramatic between him and Roz. And Roz is having maybe one of the worst years in the history of whores.
Oh, no.
She probably should have stayed in Winterfell.
Certainly yes. Looks that way, doesn't it?
But, it's a hard knock life.
She should have just hung out in Winterfell. Theon should have hung out in Winterfell.
Mm-hmm.
They could have
hung
just,
out in her.
Yeah, they could have just taken care of things for a while and had a nice old day.
I mean, her year started with what? A baby getting killed in front of her, and now she's...
I forgot about that.
Yeah. And then Joffrey and that, abuses her a bit.
Well, before that, the compassionate King of Coin or whatever he's called, Littlefinger, basically told her to get back to work after she saw the baby get killed in front of her.
Or else he's gonna kill her, I believe.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah.
He was like, "I'm gonna sell you to someone who is going to use you in ways you've never imagined."
Yeah. Yeah.
Unless you step your game up.
So she gets back to work, and her next job seemingly is pleasing in quotation marks.
The
king.
That went well.
Yeah, which she probably wouldn't be able to sit down for a month or so afterwards. And then the next time we see her, she's been abducted by Cersei, and, you know, it looks like she's not going to have a fun time of it. So, Roz has had quite a saddening year for her. Quite a saddening 5 months, I guess. 3 months, whatever it is.
Poor whore.
What a whore.
But yeah, we also learned that Joffrey is 17.
Yeah, dude. What did you think, he was older or younger?
I thought he was younger, and because the actor looks younger too.
I mean, I think in the books he's younger, but I think in relation to everyone else, he's the same age. You know, they bumped all those kids up like 2 or 3 years. So I think, I feel like he was 14 in the books. Maybe that sounds actually about right to me.
Yeah, 14 or 15, something like that.
But yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think Jackie Gleason just has a young look to him. I think he's actually pretty old.
Jackie Gleason?
I mean, I think the actor's name is Jack Gleason, isn't it?
Who?
Jack Gleason is from The Honeymooners.
It's something really similar.
The guy that plays Joffrey?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I'm telling you, it's Jack Gleason.
I'm looking it up. Yeah, it's Jack Gleason.
I told you.
Jimmy TV. See, we need to start listening to Jimmy TV more. He knows his TV.
I didn't realize that there were two Jack Gleasons.
Oh, yeah.
That's
hilarious. This guy's British as hell, and he's always talking about university, so I'm assuming he's at least 21.
Fair enough. We
follow... One of these days, Cersei.
Okay.
As in the other Jackie Gleason.
Yeah, no.
Come on. I got you.
We got you. Just
give it to me.
I really liked the scene on top of the battlements there with Tyrion and Varys. As Varys and Tyrion kind of have a little friendship budding here, it looks like.
Yeah.
And of course, Joffrey is there being an idiot, and then he disappears and lets Tyrion and Varys look out onto the veranda and speak of the game. Which was nice.
Veranda.
Mm-hmm. It really pisses me off when people talk about the game.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It doesn't have as much meaning like from in The Wire when they're talking about the game. It's just not the same.
And when they do it in The Wire, it's much more real. You know what I mean? I mean the game in The Wire is gonna kill you. The game
in the Game of Thrones seems
frivolous.
Yeah, no, well, see, that's the thing though. I mean, it's gonna kill you, but it's like no one's taking anything seriously except Stannis. Like, everyone else is like, oh, yeah, it's the game. We're playing the game. It's a good
time.
Wait,
what are you talking about? Everyone's taking it very seriously.
No, it doesn't seem like anyone's taking it.
What are you talking about?
No.
Yeah, Tyrion, I really don't know what you're talking about.
Tyrion is, like, having a little too much fun playing the game. Like, they keep on
Tyrion
saying...
Tyrion hates his life.
Look, they
what
keep
do you
on
mean
saying...
Fuck?
They keep on saying that, like...
He's talking about his laughs and gigs.
They keep on saying that Stannis is, like, coming, but they haven't prepared at all... At like
it's
now, not, all of a sudden, he's like 2 days out.
That's because Joffrey's running the show.
It's not okay. It's not that those people aren't taking it serious. They're not taking Stannis coming seriously because they are fools. They have a sense of that this is just going to last. That things will just be fine because they're privileged bitches, and none of those people are going to have to do any of the work. I feel like if this was, I don't know, we're watching the people who are running the game, and so they do have a sense of cynicism about it, and you know, they don't take it as seriously as they should because they're not the ones who have to do anything. They're not going to be on the battlefield.
Here we go. Real talk. Are you more intimidated by Mayor Carchetti or Marlo?
Marlo.
Yeah, so that's why I find it, when they talk about the game, much more frivolous in Game of Thrones than they do in The Wire.
When you say Mayor Carchetti, are you talking about Carchetti or are you talking about Littlefinger?
I'm talking about Littlefinger, but if anything, he's tougher in The Wire, so I figure we give him the benefit of the doubt in this one.
Wait, I don't understand the connection.
What's the question again?
He's basically saying, what I got from this little analogy here is he's basically saying, when... Carchetti talks about the game in The Wire, and Marlo talks about the game in The Wire. Who do you really think knows what they're talking about, and like who's actually serious about the game? And you're saying Marlo because he's actually living it, and Carchetti is just kind of up there running the shit.
It's just kind of just trying to play at it, which is what I'm kind of saying.
Those two characters aren't synonymous. Sorry, Alan, let me just get in real quick.
Yeah.
I think Littlefinger is. I'm not sure who the Marlo would be of Westeros.
No, the whole like the Carchetti or the Littlefinger of The Wire would be like fucking Rawls. Bubbles. Like Bubbles is Bubbles's white buddy trying to like trying to run the game.
No, I think
like
it would be Prop Joe.
No, Prop Joe's got more power than Littlefinger.
I'm telling you, it's Rawls. In any case,
oh well, there you go.
What I got from Jake was I thought he was talking about comparing Carchetti to like Tyrion. Whereas, like, Tyrion's kind of running the show, but he doesn't really care. But see, the thing that I was trying to say is, in the books, like, they put a lot more importance on, like, the game. And, like, even though they're having fun playing the game, like, at least some of the people realize that, like, some shit is about to go down.
You keep saying people are having fun playing
just,
the game.
Just us talking about the game is pissing me off.
Okay.
Two things. One, I don't understand what...
The game isn't played with words. It's played with actions. And we're not seeing the biggest people take any actions. So when they talk about it, it just pisses me off. Just do something.
And, I mean, Tyrion does take more actions than he has in the show. in the books. So
stop being annoying and just do something. Daenerys Targaryen, stop talking and just do something.
Well, she doesn't talk about
that. Why are you still talking about the House of the Undying? Go get your goddamn dragons back, Laura.
No. I mean, how long has it been? Like, has it only been like 6 hours? Shouldn't she have already mounted the House of the Dragons, the House of the Undying by now and gotten those
mounted
dragons
it?
Back?
Mounted it?
Yes. Upon her golden
what?
Steed.
I'll watch her mount anything.
Mm-hmm. You know what I'm trying to say, though.
By the way, before we get too far from the conversation we just had, I'd just like to say we need to give some credit to Carchetti. He's a white guy who won mayor of Chocolate City.
Yeah, it's pretty preposterous.
He needed
the two black guys to split the vote. That was the only way you could do it Abraham Lincoln style.
Hey, that's how I run.
He really played that one guy.
Yeah,
you say that's how you won Prom King? That is how Batman won Prom King.
There were like nine. There were
true
nine
story
nominees, and eight of them were black. And then there was me. That bolted me. I got the plurality of the vote, not the
Max,
majority.
That should definitely be your handle, as it should have been Prom King. I don't know why you're Batman.
Did you set up like robocalls of like really ignorant sounding people, like calling people, telling them to vote for other guys?
Yeah, I was hounding people's cell phones like mad in that. You don't even want to know. But in any case,
I think we've gotten off topic a little bit.
Let's go to Stannis and Davos.
This is actually pretty interesting. Okay. All right, so we know obviously that Davos is Stannis' hand, right?
The Onion Knight.
Do you think he would do a good job as hand? I mean, I would say definitely not. What would you guys say?
Why? Because he doesn't have enough experience in the game.
Yeah, exactly. Because he actually does stuff. That is exactly right. He actually takes action. He doesn't talk about the game, which means he obviously can't succeed in it. So, yes, I think he would be a complete failure as the Hand of the King.
He's basically like Ned Stark 2.0.
Exactly. He is basically Ned Stark.
No, I think he'd be good. I think because he's not familiarized with the game...
Ned wasn't familiar with the game either.
But because he's like an outsider for... the entire thing, I feel like as long as Stannis listened to him, like, I feel like some real progress could be made.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Davos might not be long for the world, but while he was the hand, I think he would do some good shit. Myself.
Interesting.
Yes. Even though he only really has 1.5 hands.
I think Stannis, the guy playing Stannis, is far and away the second best actor on the show behind Charles Dance, the guy playing Tywin.
I'd agree with you.
The guy playing Stannis is just killing it every scene.
And you put Stephen those two Delane above Dinklage?
I put them way above Dinklage. Dinklage has a tendency to ham it up a little
bit. The entire show has a tendency to get really soap opera-y, and it's really annoying, actually.
But he's not Stannis and Tywin good.
I get so excited for the show every week. It's always so disappointing.
Yeah, it's a lot of teasing, and you think that something's going to happen, and then nothing ever does. And then you almost know that, I mean, next week, if anyone saw the previews, like, shit is about to go down. Like, Stannis is about to land.
You know
that it's going to be really disappointing.
They spent a month filming this next episode.
I'm telling you, it's not going to be nearly as intense as you want it to be.
Well,
I am not going to have the same reaction, like, because, you know, again, this is fresh for me.
Oh, no, I'm not saying because of that. I'm saying more because it is such, like, since HBO and Game of Thrones is lower budget than a movie, like, to do the battle justice, they would definitely need, like, movie budget, you know?
But they're going
to
do it Godzilla style, right? Remember when the remake of Godzilla came out with Matthew Broderick or whatever, but the whole thing was like took place at night so you couldn't see anything? That's how they're doing it, right?
Well, the bigger reason why they did it at night was because it looks cooler.
Well, I mean, it also happens at night in the book.
Are we talking about Godzilla?
No, yes. No, we switched
in
up
the
now.
Book of Godzilla, it happened at night, and it is 10% more awesome.
In the book of Godzilla, Godzilla keeps talking about the game, and then Eric Carchetti.
And he uses all of his tentacle fingers to assault the schoolgirls.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah.
In any case, it seems like we're about done with the Game of Thrones portion.
Well, there's got to be other stuff that happened. Oh, well, what about the crypt? What about Ocean? What's her name just walking around?
Yeah,
Raccoon Girl.
Give some bread.
Like, Yeah, like, you can't do that. You can't just walk around Winterfell when you're supposed to be hiding.
She's like, oops, spotted by Master Lewin. Oops.
Yeah, yeah. Whoopsies.
Raccoons are supposed to come out at night. OSHA, come on.
Yeah, come on, OSHA.
Thankfully,
Alan, was that a surprise, or did you figure that out?
The little lord.
I suspected it. I was most surprised that none of you spoiled that last week.
Yeah.
It was really hard for Bagman to
know. Get out of here. You're the one that's always yelling spoiler because you're talking spoilers.
Like, I did not.
Spoiler because someone spoils.
From the way that they presented it, especially when they showed the bodies, I thought that the music wasn't dramatic enough. Nope. It wasn't presented with enough horror for it to be real. Mm-hmm. But then you guys, none of you spoiled it and or even like talked about it for too long, so I was like, I don't know, maybe it did happen.
We're getting better at that.
I tried to make sure that we only talked about it for like a minute so that Joe wouldn't come in saying spoiler. And then something about, oh, maybe we'll see someone going, you know?
No, this is not what happened. So. We would have been talking about it, and then Bagman would have said something like, and then in the next episode, I guess we'll see what happens with the bodies. and then I'll say spoiler alert. And that's when things are afoot.
If you don't say spoiler alert, no one knows it's a spoiler. They might just think I'm joking. You know? You never know.
I'm looking forward to the next episode when Tyrion screws Cersei and then Jaime Lannister does something cool.
I just sent you guys a delightful GIF in the Skype thing.
The next episode is going to be intense because we've got Arya escaping. I mean, this is going to have to be like the payoff episode here. I believe George Georgi is writing this too.
Oh my god!
You click on the GIF?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, it's good, right?
Yeah, it's something.
Well, Joe, I thought you'd especially appreciate since Dagobert's making that nice face.
As I was saying, I think Georgie Porgy is writing the next episode. And shit is about to pop off. We're going to the House of the Undying. We're having this...
Do you think we're doing that next episode?
We've got to.
No, we're not getting House of the Undying until 10,
dude. They've been pussyfooting around that shit for too long.
Yeah, they should have waited. They should have held the pussyfoot scene from yesterday for next week. Because they're going to have to continue the pussyfoot.
Yeah.
Because they're not going to show that.
I'm telling you.
They're not
going to
show House of the Undying the same day.
I bet you she goes in by the end of the episode, though. In any case, I bet you she goes into the House of the Undying by the end of the episode. But, like, they cut away at the very end.
That could definitely be the lead into the 10th episode.
What's up?
Someone throw Joffrey in there, too. But maybe he could just, like, die in there.
He could.
In the House of the Undying.
Oh, yeah, I guess it probably wouldn't work.
No. In any case, next week we'll be talking a bunch of nonsense about the episode. So, you guys...
Just two more left, you guys. Just two more left.
Yeah?
Benioff and Weiss have mentioned that the episode turned out incredibly well.
Yeah, well, I don't trust anything David Benioff says, so...
Is he the douchier one or the one with the glasses?
He's the douchier one.
Which one's the douche one?
there's one that looks like a total douche, like a total D-bag.
Yeah, he's married to Amanda Peet.
Oh my god, he's married to Amanda Peet?
Yes. I'm not a David Benioff fan. I read one of his novels. It was not good.
Well, yeah, how did these guys get enough money to even go about this in the first place?
Who are these clowns? Why aren't we
exactly,
right for the show?
Exactly. I've often wondered about that.
I mean, David Benioff did write X-Men Origins Wolverine.
Jake, oh my god.
You should write a spec script for the Redwall series.
Totally, man. Boom, done. Get it produced and we're off.
Yeah.
Let's do it. Can anyone draw?
No.
I might be able to help out with that. I've got a couple people that can draw. In any case.
I can't believe he's married to Amanda Peet. Oh my god, such a douche.
He wrote X-Men Origins Wolverine. He wrote his first movie / novel was 25th Hour with...
Oh, dude, 25th Hour was actually pretty good.
Yeah, and then he kind of fell off.
Well, didn't he do The Kite Runner? Wasn't that like a Oscar movie?
He did the screenplay for The Kite Runner, yeah.
I don't think it was an Oscar movie for writing, though.
I don't know.
All right, let's...
In any case, that just makes you think so. Before you leave, do you have anything else to say?
I didn't take any notes, so no. I really want to see... some characters. I really want to see Thomas Evans. I can't wait till Thomas Evans gets in, and obviously it's not going to be till season 3, but I love me some Thomas Evans and his crew.
Who?
Tom Seven Strings.
Oh, right.
Oh, yeah.
And Lemon Cloak.
Yes, the Lemon Cloak. Yeah, that should be fun.
And Jack be Lucky.
Spoiler alert.
And which one's the archer?
Yeah,
the really good one.
Legolas.
Argay or something like that, right?
Yeah, Angay or whatever his name is.
Legolas,
something like that.
Hawkeye.
Elrond.
Link.
Who's Hawkeye?
The Avengers.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, so Jimmy TV, we'll talk to you next week.
Yeah, I'm going to go watch Awake and then post my TV recap.
All right, son.
Peace.
All right, on to the Mad Men. I want to preface this by first saying I think this is my favorite episode of the season.
Oh, really?
Yes. I don't think it's the best episode, but I think it's my favorite episode. Like, it was fun to watch.
It was.
And some of them are like, I mean, they're all fairly fun to watch, but this one, it was more like they were actually having fun within the episode, as opposed to some of the other ones where it's like, you know, Sally's being a bitch and like going against her step grandmother, you know, that sort of stuff. So it was like they were actually having fun in the episode.
I mean, why do you love to say that Sally's being a bitch all the time and she's a little 13-year-old girl?
I'm just saying she's being kind of a bitch. What do you want me to do?
I think you've got a problem talking about prepubescent little girls as being bitches.
Okay, well, I'll try to curb that next time.
Okay, please do.
In any case, they all seem to, like, most of the characters actually seem like they were having fun for the most part of this episode, so I think that's why it's my favorite episode of the season.
Yeah, I get that.
It's a little bit more lighthearted.
I don't usually have that with this show, but I don't know, I feel like I can think of other shows where I have that feeling of, even though it's good, some episodes are hard to watch because everybody's so miserable or, you know, not having fun.
So, and I think one of the main reasons why everyone was having fun is because we kind of almost get a return to form for Don, at least in the romance world, if you will, or the flirtatious world, I suppose. When he and Joan go to the Jaguar dealership and then the bar, I mean, they have really good chemistry on screen, of course, but it was good to see Don kind of going out there and kind of flirting again. Which gives me hope that it'll be sort of like, now that he's got his flirting mojo back, his creative mojo might come back a little bit too. So, but yeah, I mean, that bar scene was great. I really enjoyed that entire thing with him.
Yeah, those two are just so on. And I was watching it thinking that we are never going to win the war on tobacco as long as there are scenes like that where those two look so fucking cool with their cigarettes and their drinks.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, no, I mean, the whole Don and Joan thing, even like the flowers were a nice touch afterwards, like you sent her the first flowers
they
ever sent her afterwards, and it was like a nice little inside joke sort of thing, and I don't know, just the whole thing, just they were clearly having fun, and they were clearly on top of their game, and it was just nice to see Don flirting again, as opposed to just being kind of like blissfully happy, like floating around, like not really trying anymore. So
kind of felt, the whole episode kind of felt like, I don't know, like a third season episode, just the tone of it, and even the scene of Joan blowing up at that bimbo in the lobby. Just having that in the episode, it felt like old times, mm-hmm. which it hasn't in a long time.
Yeah. So, I think that was definitely one of the reasons why I found it so nice. But yeah, like I said, we've got Don. It seems like they're definitely making, I mean, to me at least, it seems like it's definitely like a Don / Tiger Woods thing, where Tiger Woods hasn't been the same since he stopped, like, doing it. You know, trying to get some strange. And so now that Don is, like, back to flirting a little bit, I think it's part of their personality, you know? Like, they're always trying to impress They're always trying to, you know, they're always competing. They're always trying to impress the women or whatever. So I feel like this might lead to a creative renaissance for Don, so I'm excited to see that.
I'm glad you said that, because I was about to ask you what you felt the connection between the flirting and the creativity is. And I think there's something about that. There's something about the hunt of telling someone what they want to hear to get a result in both of those situations that Don hasn't had in a long time, and he's kind of starting to build it up again.
Mm-hmm. Is he, though? Is he building up his creative juices? I mean, like, he came up with the devil thing. The devil thing wasn't as good as Ginsberg thing, right?
Well,
wasn't that great, but he was at least trying again.
And that was, like, also the first thing he's done in, like, what, a year?
Who knows?
So, like, but, I mean, he's at least...
I agree, though, that, you know, we can tell that he wants it again.
Yeah,
but I'm not sure if it's coming back.
Don't know, and I think that this Jaguar thing is going to be what we'll see, if he can get it back or not.
Yeah, it's going to be the be-all, end-all sort of thing. But, I mean, it's good to see that he actually is caring again about the work, and that we'll see. I mean, it should be interesting to see if Don can get it back or not.
It all seemed a little, to use one of your favorite words, but I mean, a little douchey. I think Don is turning into a douchebag. I'm not sure if he is excited about the Jaguar account for the sake of being creative. I think it's almost more of like, I think it plays more off of what Megan's going on with Megan as far as her, you know, not being down with the advertising and the commercialness of it or whatever. I think it's more him trying to plant his flag and be like, look, this is important and I'm really good at it. So that's why we're going to do really good at Jaguar, not so much as I'm a really badass creative type. We're going to do this for the firm, like, you know, like the speech that he said. To me, it seems like he's more trying to prove it to himself, and I just don't think he's going to be able to come through.
You don't like Don.
I think he's a whole I think he's turned into a bit of a douchebag.
What about him is douchey? I was going to ask while you're saying that.
Just kind of like the way that he was, kind of going back to the episode with Howard Johnson's, obviously the way he was treating Megan, getting a little, prissy about it, kind of throwing a big childish fit. Mm-hmm. And then I'm trying to think back exactly when he started really acting douchey. Scene at the bar, maybe just kind of, to me, his flirting didn't seem as smooth or as cagey as it used to be. To me, it seemed a little bit more smarmy or something. I'm not sure exactly. It's tough to put my finger on.
I definitely felt that I thought it was maybe one of the first douchey things that we've seen him do, with how he reacted to Ginsberg's, you know, getting intimidated by him and leaving his work in the car. I mean, that was kind of a dick move.
Right.
But other than that, like, I don't know. I don't, he's one of the people on the show that he rarely has self-conscious moments like that, that he acts out in that way. He's usually, I don't know, his new attitude, I don't really like it that much, but I like it a little bit in the sense that he doesn't snap at people anymore when they get in his face. There have been so many scenes where people have just shouted in his face this season, and he just kind of shrugged it off, or he just went for his cigarettes. Like, I think that kind of shows like a strength of character almost to react that way.
No, yeah, I definitely don't mind that. I think just him, I get him just trying to get his mojo back, to me is depressing. It's depressing to watch.
Yeah,
I mean, it'll be especially depressing if he can't get it back, of course.
Yeah.
But if he does get it back by the end of the season, are you going to still feel depressed that he's back? Or?
Maybe, yeah. I don't know. Maybe it's just the thought of you know, the kind of this guy who's probably past, or clearly past his prime, probably the game's slipped past him, and that's kind of the whole theme of the show. You know, a lot of it is, especially with kind of the 60s going on, the youth movement versus kind of old school, whatever, and Don definitely straddles that, but I would say he leans more to old school than new school. So to me, it's a portrait of an old school guy trying to be new school, and I guess that's douchey.
It's his job.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I call it douchey, but
and we'll look, see. I mean, Don is not that old.
No, he's certainly not as old as Sterling or Cooper or whatever. But I mean, there's a pretty good dividing point between kind of the new school and old school as far as the 60s are concerned. People who are hip, who are into it, who know things, and the squares.
Yeah, but I mean that's not necessarily his fault.
No, I'm not saying it is his fault, but I mean, you're right. There's nothing he can do about it, and he is trying to do something about it, and I think that's kind of the problem for me anyway, but we'll see what happens.
I mean, I think we'll have at least one last great Don gasp here of creativity, whether that's in Jaguar or it comes next season. I don't think he's completely lost it, you know. I think he can still hold his own, but he might not be as forward-thinking, maybe, as he seemed to be last year with some of his ad campaigns.
This is definitely the question that they're setting up, and this show, I feel, does a really good job of never giving us what we think exactly is going to happen. Like, when they set up a will-he-or-won't-he situation, a lot of times it ends up being some third thing that we didn't even think of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So,
God,
I mean...
dies.
Yeah, or just, you know, like... You know, all last season, we were watching Don try to deal with his divorce, and he started dating blonde McHatefuck, and he was kind of like, you're watching it thinking, okay, is he gonna, you know, finally grow up and have a mature relationship with someone, or won't he? And then, you know, he just ends up getting with Megan, which nobody saw coming.
Yeah, right. A 21-year-old, yeah, so.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I really have no idea where they're going to go with this, but that's definitely the question that they're setting up of can he do this Jaguar?
So well, maybe Jaguar also vaporized, something to do with Lane's situation. It'll just kind of end up not even happening. The big account push.
Or there'll be an alien invasion.
That's
led by Ginsburg.
Yeah, that's what I was talking to my roommate about yesterday. I was like, how kind of hilarious would it be if everything was ultra real until like halfway through season 7, and then all of a sudden like the communists invade the United States, and all of a sudden it becomes like this weird...
A little historical fiction.
Yeah. But I wanted to go off of what Alan was saying, where the question of, you know, if Don's going to get it back or whatever, they're also raising the question of if Don can have a happy relationship while in like the context of him getting his creativity and his mojo back, because as we've seen in the past few episodes, his relationship has been on a bit of a downward slide that ended in this past episode with a plate of spaghetti thrown against the wall. And I know Alan is really pulling for the relationship,
mm-hmm.
but at the moment
it's not looking so good. Not looking so good.
I disagree.
Oh, okay.
You think spaghetti on the wall is a sign of a healthy relationship?
No, the reaction to the spaghetti, I think, is a sign of a healthy relationship. When I look at scenes between Don and Megan, the things that make me hopeful are as I'm watching how he reacts now versus how he would have back then when he was with Betty. And, like, there was a similar scene where Betty was trying to get a reaction out of Don, and she pushed him, and he pushed her right back. Mm-hmm. And in this scene, she threw the spaghetti, and he froze. And when she told him to sit down and eat, old Don would have just stormed out, tracked Joan down, and give her what Joan was asking for.
Yeah, but he thought maybe he was about to get some pussy.
He did. He did. For
yes.
A second there.
Yeah, he did. That. Okay,
I
honestly,
agree with you.
Everything...
I agree with no, Alan. I agree with you. I do think that Don's playing it better, but I don't. But I don't think Don's gonna be the problem. I think Megan's gonna be the problem. I think she's gonna want to move on.
Well, I mean,
it's possible.
And speaking about Don's reaction, I mean, did you see his reaction at that play? He was completely stone faced. Like he looked on the cusp of like barfing and like standing up and yelling how much bullshit the play was. And, like, to me, that seems like an old Don reaction, where he's not really opening his mind up to new things, and he thinks that... I mean, I do understand that the play he was seeing was a direct attack on his life's work, which, of course, is going to put you in a negative mind state. But,
yeah. Sorry, two things, because I didn't get the chance to finish.
Oh.
Don trying to initiate sex with Megan when she yelled at him, of everything that happened between them, that troubled me the most. I thought that was the biggest sign of there being a problem, that he did that.
Okay.
But moving on to the play, he had that look on his face because he was insulted, as we then saw in the next scene. Megan knew why he was upset, and they immediately started talking about it. That monologue that guy gave was insulting what he did for a living, and Don took that as an attack, not just from that guy, but from Megan, and that's what they were fighting about when they got back home.
Yeah. What do you want to say? I mean, yes, that's true.
No, I'm saying that I think that that was why he had that look on his face. I think that's why we zoomed in and looked at his reaction, was because he was insulted, not he was like...
Well, yeah, no, he was insulted, but he's also thinking in his mind, this is what Megan really thinks of what I do. And so if he's not, if she doesn't really respect what he does, this goes back to the whole creativity thing that we've been talking about all season, where Megan realizes that, you know, creating commercials and ads really isn't all that creative. It's more clever than creative. And so it seems as though she's...
What is the difference between clever and creative?
Creativity is like you make something out of nothing. And clever is sort of you just kind of play with established tropes.
Oh, I see. Yeah, kind of the change that Don has been noticing, that they're not like so much making stuff anymore, is just like meshing things that already exist together.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, like that one commercial where they wanted, where the ad people were so set on
getting something Beatles sounding.
Yeah, the hard Day's Night, making it look exactly like that. And I mean, that's more clever. That's not creative. That's just them sort of spoofing it, giving their own maybe twist on it. And that's more clever than creativity.
So I don't agree with the word choice, but I get what you're saying. I feel like it's I don't even know what the word for it would be, but I see exactly what you're talking about. It's the new, it's postmodern is what's starting to happen.
Mm-hmm.
That you can make art out of already existing art, and that's a huge change in thinking for someone like Don. I don't know that he can handle that exactly. I think he's offended by that.
But, I mean, to my original point, it seems like, you know, Megan is the more creative of the two. At least she's doing a more artistic medium, if you will. And so it seems as though Don at least has to be thinking that, especially after her taking him to this play, that she is losing a lot of respect of Don for at least what he does at work, and that's, you know, how he's defined himself for the past 30-odd years or whatever, 20 years. So,
yeah.
I mean, I think that's basically the crux of the relationship right now, and I think it's going to be interesting to see if they can actually... I mean, I'm not saying that they're going to be, you know, get divorced at the end of the season or anything, but I mean,
right,
it's clear that they're not as happy as they were. Now, of course, that could be the honeymoon phase wearing off as well.
Sure, sure.
But if Don feels as though she doesn't respect him at all for what he does, I feel like that's going to be a huge sticking point. And
yeah, it very well could be. And I agree. I think that it would be Megan who would end it between the two of them.
Mm-hmm. I could definitely see Megan just kind of writing him some letter and like disappearing off into Greenwich Village or something.
Yeah, because she's so young, you know.
But along the lines of really ridiculously 60s things, like that play was, which was painful for me to watch.
Really bad.
That was definitely quintessential 60s. We have almost maybe the opposite end of the spectrum with the Hare Krishna, the whole Krishna-ics. I don't know what they call themselves. But with Kinsey's return and him being in an almost hippie-ish sort of cult, if you will, with the Hare Krishnas.
Kinsey didn't change a bit, man. I mean, like, obviously, being in the Hare Krishnas or whatever, but, like, his character or whatever, the way that he is class Kinsey.
Yeah, Kinsey is back, even though he shaved his head and had that crazy little ponytail thing. He's still Kinsey.
Yeah, he's always been very susceptible to movements.
Mm-hmm. But, I mean, how awesome and almost hilarious was that scene where Harry is just getting into the Hare Krishna chanting? Yeah. And he's like there. How long was he there? It seemed like he was there for like 5-6 hours. So.
Yeah, they cut away and then came back and it was still going on.
And it was complete dark outside.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, man. But yeah, no, that was great. And the fact that it was interesting to see Kinsey come back. I mean, I guess I'm sure there wasn't a lot of clamoring for Kinsey to return.
Oh, but, I was clamoring for it.
It was nice to see Kinsey come back and be who he is with the Negron complex.
Oh my God!
It's pronounced Negron.
I'm sorry.
No, that's the exact exchange that they had.
Yeah, no, that was just great, and I mean it brought the '60s. I mean, it just was real quintessentially '60s as well.
I laughed so hard when they revealed that it was a. He said, "This is my most important work. It's a spec script of this series, Star Trek."
Oh man!
Which, by the way, I think he's screwed because that show got canceled after 3 seasons. I don't know where in the '60s that happened, but if he ends up going out there. He's fucked. Like,
well,
that's
no, because Harry was like, you cannot contact the Star Trek people. Remember, he was just like, they really liked it, but you cannot contact them.
Yeah.
So I feel like...
How about Harry kind of coming through for his friend?
Yeah, a lot. Yeah.
I didn't know he was capable of doing something so deep.
My roommate and I disagreed on that point. I mean, I didn't really have a strong opinion about it, but my roommate was almost... saying that he felt that it was mean of him to do that because he had admitted that Kinsey had no talent as far as writing television went.
So he sided with Lakshmi.
No, not just yeah. I forgot about that scene. Yeah, I guess he kind of had the same opinion that it was mean to send him there because he would fail. But I took that more as Harry trying to get him away from this cult. That wasn't going to let him grow as a person.
How hilarious was the dude running the cult? Oh my God.
What was
he was so disinterested.
Name? It was like Papa Ramana or whatever? Papa Rakta?
Papa Roach.
I'm not sure.
But no, I felt it as Harry being like, I mean, Kinsey clearly has fallen on hard times. And I think it was a little bit of both. I mean, not mean, but I think he sent Kinsey out there, even though his script was bad, like, especially in those times, it's not like you had to be any sort of great writer.
That's true. I mean, yeah, he could have just gone out there and chased his dreams. Maybe he'd run into something.
Exactly, and like written for like a soap opera or something. You know, it's not like the writing is amazing, especially at that time in Hollywood.
Yeah.
He just wants to hang out for 40 years and get a job writing for the Sci-Fi Channel.
Exactly. So, I mean, I feel like Kinsey, I feel like Harry, like, he might not think he's going to make it, but he might as well try. And then, of course, he is also trying to get him away from Lakshmi, who is batshit insane.
And who is a mutation of Kobe Smulders and Juliet Lewis's face just combined.
I thought it was Juliet Lewis for a while.
I did too at first. Exact same face.
But yeah, no, Lakshmi, nuts. She's
no Mr. Belding, though.
No Mr. Belding this episode.
Yeah.
Who was it last time that was in it? It wasn't Mr. Belding. It was someone else. Well, Mr. Belding was in one like 2 episodes ago, but then wasn't there some other like random?
Well, we had the Sin City girl in there, and we had
not the Sin City.
Mack, of course, and
we had
Belding.
There was some other Belding-like guy that was in like the last episode or the episode before. I can't remember.
What was the last episode?
I can't remember. I'm not even sure who the character was. I just remember you guys mentioning it on the pod.
Who is Sin City Girl?
Sin City Girl is Gilmore Girl.
Yeah.
Oh. I hope no one noticed that I accidentally just said Sim City.
Ooh. I might have said Sim City too.
Sim City, great game.
Great game, you guys.
Better movie.
But yeah, no. So we get Lakshmi getting nuts and liking it from behind, apparently.
She knew Harry liked it like that.
And it was kind of hilarious that Harry finally got, like, a little ass on the side, because he always seems to be talking about it, but we never actually see him get it, and then it ends up being this crazy woman.
He stumbled into it a few times, I think.
Yeah,
just a couple of times.
I mean, it was nice to see Harry do something, like, actually care again, because he actually was he actually seemed to be a bit of an emotional guy in the first season, you know, like someone mm-hmm. that was like on the good side of things, and recently he's just been kind of vapid, but it was nice to see that he actually still cares. But
Lippman.
Yeah.
It was Lippman from Seinfeld in the last episode.
Yes, Lippman from Seinfeld it was.
Nice.
But yeah, and then we go from Harry, who's usually a loser, to Lane, who's always a loser, unfortunately. And somehow Lane just has like the worst luck. It's bad luck coupled with, I don't know, his lameness, I guess.
It's like people on that show who aren't naturally, they don't have that Don or Roger Sterling instinct, who try to do Don and Roger type things that always fail. Mm-hmm. Like, Peter doesn't know how to do that kind of stuff, and he always gets screwed when he does it. And I feel like it's the same thing with Lane. He's just too good of a, like, too, I don't know, prissy of a guy.
I mean, he runs into a lot of bad luck, though, too. I mean, the whole tax episode here, where he owes $8,000 or whatever to the British government is ridiculous.
I thought it was interesting, because I had no idea, I had no concept of how much $8,000 was, but then when it turned out that the Jaguar was $5,600, yeah. I was like, yeah. Damn, that sucks, $8,000.
Lane owes some serious monies.
Speaking of, I thought that it was great that when Pete offended Lane in the meeting, and then Don goes, Pete, you wanted me to stop this last time.
Right. Yeah, that was good.
It seems as though there might be like a little parallel there with Pete being the younger version of Lane, you know? Since it's clear Pete can't adapt to the new surroundings, he's very stuck in the old ways. So I could easily see Pete being Lane, you know.
You feel like Pete can't adapt? I feel like of everyone at Sterling Cooper, Pete's doing the best job.
I don't know. Not socially.
Not socially, but he...
That's what I was talking socially, not necessarily business-wise, yeah.
Oh, I see. There was another callback that I wanted to mention that I liked. Oh, Don mentioned to Joan about something that a woman told him once when he said, I like to be bad and then go home and be good.
Mm-hmm.
He was talking, it was the comedian's wife.
Yes.
It was Ms. Barrett who said that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, that is something she would definitely say.
Dirty hoe.
One last thing I wanted to mention is Peggy is having a really bad season as well. She started out by being rejected by Hines several times, and then she gets put on Mohawk because she has experience, and now of course Mohawk is out the window. They've suspended their business. So I don't think Peggy actually has any accounts right now. And, I mean, we haven't really seen her be all that creative this season. She's really comfortable in her surroundings. So that clearly has hurt her creativity and productivity. But it should be interesting. I'm on the fence here. I feel as though the next two episodes are clearly going to be a Ginsburg and Don show-off. And maybe Don doesn't have his fastball anymore, but maybe Peggy helps him out and gets him over the top so that we get to see their relationship again and how good they work together. Because we had such a couple of episodes ago, they were just so shitty with Belding in the room.
Belding.
But, I mean, I feel like we're...
Could you perform in front of him?
I mean, it would be hard, that's for sure. But I feel like we're coming to maybe getting to see Don and Peggy really work together again.
That would be nice.
And end up vanquishing Ginsburg, if you will. I mean, it's either going to be that or Ginsburg's going to declare himself the champion and Peggy's going to be completely obsolete. So I don't know. I don't know where we're going with that.
I miss Sal.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sure he'll pop up again sooner or later, don't you think?
I would like that. I really liked his character, and it was really sad the way he left.
Mm-hmm.
Not that that has anything to do with anything.
No, not at all. before we end this...
I missed.
Not at all. Shut your mouth, Alan.
Before we end this pod, do you guys have anything else to say?
The Kite Runner only got nominated for Best Original Score, so fuck me for bringing it up.
How many episodes do we have left in Madmen?
I feel like two.
I think I saw three. It might be two.
That's what my roommate said, that there were three more left, but that would mean that the season was 13 episodes long because of the dual episode in the first airing, I guess, the return. So I'm not sure how many episodes.
I think they're usually 13 episodes.
Okay, so then we have three left, I suppose.
Yeah, it looks like there's three left.
So it looks like it's all gonna come to a head here sooner rather than later.
Very exciting.
But yeah, you can always come by the website in-the-bag-with-2gs.com. There should be a bit of a house retrospective, if you will, tomorrow. Mm. The Fox television show that had its final episode ever tonight.
Oh, yeah.
And
the last house was on tonight?
Yes.
Yeah.
Last one ever?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Oh. That television. You guys need to make sure you set your DVRs. Oh, wait.
Yeah, it's over. but yeah, so we'll have a nice little
hop onto the site, check out all the work that we did on action movies, specifically of the 90s. There's a lot of good stuff on there. There's podcasts, articles, and the like.
Mm-hmm.
Great podcast.
We should be getting a couple more movie reviews up there of movies actually in the theaters, so come by and check that out. And
I believe I'll have a list coming out maybe possibly tomorrow.
Ooh, everyone loves a list.
Ooh, Alan's getting listy over there. But yeah, in any case, come by the website, in-the-bag-with-2gs.com, and enjoy yourselves.
Put a bag on it.